Today is Thursday, August 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, political opposition to Prime Minister Boris Johnson's move to suspend Parliament gains momentum.
Whether the recent manoeuvres in the last few hours and days in Westminster make it more likely or less likely a deal is done, absolutely nobody can know.
Also ahead, a group of former peace negotiators for the FARC say they are taking up arms again, and China's military is rotating its troop units deployed to Hong Kong. Those stories are next. Political opposition to Prime Minister Boris Johnson's move to suspend Parliament crystallized Thursday amid protests, legal action, and a petition to block the move, which has garnered more than 1 million signatures. To get a better understanding of what's taking place and its implications, I spoke with Thomas Raines, head of the Europe program at Chatham House.
Now, there are a lot of different interpretations, really, of what the Prime Minister is trying to do. On the one hand, it may be that he's trying to deliver a no-deal Brexit. So that means leaving the European Union without any agreement, no transition, nothing to kind of smooth the edges of that cliff edge. Another view is that he is trying, in a way, it is a gambit. It is a bluff. Or at least that he is trying to show the European Union that he is willing to leave with no deal in the hope that they will make some concessions and he will be able to force a revised deal through Parliament. And I think the third interpretation is that he is trying to set the terms of a general election. So at the moment, he is in a weak position in Parliament. And in a way, I think the move for suspension is a reflection of that weakness. He has a working majority of just one in the House of Commons. So in effect, at some stage, there will have to be a general election because governments with majorities of one don't last very long at all. So the question is, does he want that election to take place before Brexit happens or potentially after it happens? And there is also a working theory that in a way, he is setting the terms of an election where it is him as the representative of the people who voted for Brexit versus Parliament, which is trying to block that. And in that sense, that might be quite an appealing narrative for him to go into a general election.
How is the general public reacting to this? Because, as you mentioned, we are approaching a date of Brexit, October 31st, and Boris Johnson, as you mentioned, has signaled that he is willing to take Britain out of the EU, deal or no deal. And you have the EU saying that the withdrawal agreement that was negotiated under former Prime Minister Theresa May is not open for renegotiation. So what are people trying to, you know, make out of what's going on? And what do you see as a likely next step as both sides are trying to assert their positions?
So, I mean, this has been a very controversial and divisive move. Obviously, for many, particularly of those on the Remain side, but not just that, they are very uncomfortable with the idea of using this slightly arcane parliamentary procedure in order to limit the role of Parliament. So many people, and you know, I share this view personally, are uncomfortable with the idea that parliamentary scrutiny and parliamentary time is limited in any way. I think there is a risk that the kind of blowback and criticism from this sort of move ends up being counterproductive for Boris Johnson. But at the moment, it seems really that, like with so much of our politics in Britain at the moment, it really depends on which side of the fence you are on. So lots of people who have been supporters of Brexit have been pretty supportive of the move for prorogation to suspend Parliament. And similarly, those who have been against Brexit or in favour of a second referendum or finding another way or a softer Brexit overall have been very critical of the move. So in a way, it is just simply kind of entrenched and reflected those domestic divisions.
Thomas Raines is the head of the European program at the Chatham House. Thank you so much for your insight today.
Thank you.
A group of former peace negotiators for the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia say they are taking up arms again following what they consider the failure of a 2016 peace deal to guarantee their political rights.
alias Iván Márquez, was the chief negotiator of the deal that sought to end a half century of fighting. In a video published Thursday, he appeared alongside a group of some 20 heavily armed guerrillas, denouncing what he considered the failure of President Iván Duque to hold up the accord. Some 7,000 rebels disarmed as part of the deal, but several have suffered attacks since demobilizing. In addition, the U.S. has sought the extradition on drug charges of one of Marquez's top aides, alias Jesus Sandrich, who stood alongside Márquez in the video. China's military is rotating its troops deployed to Hong Kong in a process that may be routine, but is likely to strike some nerves in a city that has been embroiled in protests for the past 3 months. Reuters' Ryan Brooks has more.
China's military has sent a new batch of troops into Hong Kong. That's according to Beijing's state media Thursday. State broadcaster CCTV showed troop carriers heading across the border in darkness before arriving at the People's Liberation Army barracks in Hong Kong. It was described as a routine troop rotation. The video also showed troops disembarking from a PLA Navy ship. It comes as protests in Hong Kong continue to rock the city. The angry and sometimes violent protests against the government have lasted 3 months. The timing of the troop movements are likely to strike some nerves in the city. Another major march calling for fuller democracy is planned there for Saturday. Beijing has denounced the protests, accused the U.S. and Britain of interfering in its affairs in Hong Kong, and sent clear warnings that forceful intervention is possible. Asian and Western diplomats in Hong Kong tell Reuters they've been expecting the move of PLA troops as an annual event. But they also said they'll be closely watching for any sign of increased troop numbers or unusual activity. Also in recent weeks, hundreds of People's Armed Police carried out drills in the mainland Chinese city of Shenzhen, just across the border from Hong Kong. The protests are the greatest political crisis to strike the city since it returned to Chinese rule in 1997. And one of the biggest popular challenges to Chinese leader Xi Jinping since he came to power 7 years ago.
That was Ryan Brooks from Reuters News Agency. Among other top stories in the world, South Korea's Supreme Court has ordered a lower court to reconsider one of the criminal charges against former President Park Geun-hye, who was forced from office in 2017 over a corruption scandal. Chinese investment in Nigeria's oil and gas industry has reached $16 billion, according to its state-run oil company. Analysts worry about a lack of transparency in the sector and slow development of the country's renewable energy market. Having largely spared Puerto Rico, Hurricane Dorian is expected to strengthen into a major hurricane in the coming days as it approaches the northern Bahamas and the U.S. mainland. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the VOANews.com website and with our mobile app. This is VOA News.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has the power to transform the lives of people worldwide, especially in Africa. But often, educational practices are outdated. Rethinking education on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Controversy over refugee and immigration policies in the Trump administration continues unabated. On this encore edition of Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel and Minh Dao, editor in VOA's Vietnamese service, talk with Oan No Usadi, who fled South Vietnam and arrived in the United States as a refugee. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Forces loyal to Yemen's internationally recognized government of President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi are claiming to have captured strategic locations in the southern capital of Aden, including the presidential palace from the southern forces. VOA cannot independently verify that claim, but Edward Uranian has more.
Arab media are reporting that fighters loyal to Yemen's southern separatist movement regained control Thursday of Aden after government forces temporarily recaptured strategic positions inside the city a day earlier. Amateur video showed forces loyal to the government of internationally recognized Yemeni President Abd Rabbu Mansour Hadi battling the separatists inside Aden Wednesday amid reports that they had temporarily taken control of the airport and the presidential palace, which the separatists seized several weeks ago. Deputy Foreign Minister Mohammed al-Hadrami said in a tweet Thursday that fighter jets from Saudi coalition partner the United Arab Emirates had bombed forces loyal to Hadi in several places, causing a number of casualties. VOA could not independently confirm the accusation. Idros al-Zubaydi, leader of the southern separatists and one-time governor of Aden under President Hadi, said in a televised address Wednesday that his side had acted in good faith by attending talks in the Saudi port city of Jeddah to iron out differences with President Hadi. He went on to say his men would regain control of strategic southern positions after a brief setback. He says that President Hadi moved a large number of men into the south to try to retake Aden and appeared to be more interested in controlling the south of the country than in recapturing the capital city of Sana'a from the Houthi militia group. The struggle to gain control of southern Yemen came amid news that the United States was now prepared to negotiate with the Houthis. Saudi Deputy Defense Minister Prince Khalid bin Salman met with U.S. officials in Washington amid the apparent change in U.S. policy. UN envoy Martin Griffiths told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV that he thought that the U.S. decision to talk to the Houthis would have a positive effect in trying to resolve the Yemeni conflict. Paul Sullivan, a professor at the U.S. National Defense University, tells VOA that he fears that forces to break Yemen apart are far greater than forces trying to keep it together as one country. Yemen is a textbook case of political and social entropy, he says. After several decades of splits and breaks, it could completely shatter into numerous sharp pieces that could spread harm throughout the region. If Yemen shatters, he adds, and there is a section run by any Iran-backed groups, especially near a port, Tehran could have an almost permanent outpost to help with its hegemonic activities, creating a constant low-grade threat to Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the UAE. Washington-based Gulf analyst Theodore Karasik argues that the UAE has been supporting the southern separatists in order to get rid of militias belonging to the Muslim Brotherhood from the Islah party associated with the Hadi government. Karasik agrees with Sullivan that the UAE's strategy of supporting the separatists moves Yemen farther down a path to possible partition. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Both Iran and the United States say they are not seeking heightened tensions or conflict after President Donald Trump said at the G7 summit he would be willing to hold talks with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani in the coming weeks under the right conditions. But experts say obstacles remain to high-level talks both in Tehran and in Washington. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more from the State Department.
President Donald Trump surprised many, especially in Tehran, when he responded favorably to a push by French President Emmanuel Macron, saying there is a really good chance he would meet with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani in the coming weeks. This fueled speculation it could happen at the UN General Assembly in late September. Asked Wednesday at the Pentagon if the U.S. crisis with Iran is over, Defense Secretary Mark Esper had this to say.
We are not seeking conflict with Iran. We want to engage with them diplomatically.
Visiting Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, who has also offered to mediate between Washington and Tehran, Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif said his country does not want heightened tensions with the U.S., but he added,
"We believe every country should be able to enjoy its rights under international law."
Tensions escalated after Trump withdrew last year from the international agreement that restrained Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief, and then added more sanctions on Iran. Foreign policy experts say there is momentum now for some kind of U.S.-Iran summit.
A meeting is not a negotiation. It will be quite, I would say, a seismic event if that is to occur, but it will not be the negotiations itself, which will be necessarily a long and complex task.
But most experts also express skepticism after recent hostilities in international waters.
But I think that we need an extended period of calm where we don't have Iranians taking ships in international waters, where, let's say, the U.S. is not ramping up even more sanctions.
Some experts pointed to Rouhani's statement that he is not after a photo op.
Yes, I think the Iranians very much worry about a photo opportunity that may benefit President Trump, but that doesn't lead to any substantive concessions on the Americans' part.
Some analysts say Iranian leaders may be drawing conclusions from Trump's summits with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, which have failed to resolve longstanding conflicts over nuclear programs or to get international sanctions removed. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
Satellite images appear to show the smoldering remains of a rocket at an Iranian space center that was to conduct a U.S.-criticized satellite launch. The satellite pictures were taken Thursday morning at the Imam Khomeini Space Center in Iran's Semnan province. The top U.S. military officer says it is too early to talk about the future of U.S. counterterrorism forces in Afghanistan. Marine Corps General Joseph Dunford, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told reporters at the Pentagon on Wednesday that the U.S. military has no plans to withdraw troops from the country. The United States has negotiated with Taliban insurgents since last year with the goal of ending the 18-year-old war. VOA's Lattice Hoke reports the latest round of talks currently taking place in Doha, Qatar, seem to have made some progress.
A spokesman for the Taliban delegation in Doha says the parties are close to an agreement that would see U.S. troops withdraw from Afghanistan in exchange for a Taliban commitment not to turn Afghanistan into a safe haven for terrorists. Taliban officials were quoted as saying that according to the deal, U.S. troops would withdraw from Afghanistan within 2 years. In Washington, the top U.S. military officer, General Joseph Dunford, said it was premature to talk about withdrawal.
The operational environment would clearly change in the wake of a negotiation, but I think we'd have to make assessments. I would then make recommendations to the secretary and would have a conversation with the president.
Meanwhile, officials in Afghanistan said Wednesday that Taliban militants had killed at least 14 pro-government militia members in a terrorist attack in the western province of Herat, one of many that have taken place during the peace talks.
The current environment today, at the level of violence associated with the insurgency, I think we and the Afghans agree that some degree of support is necessary. That's why we have forces on the ground inside of Afghanistan today.
The Taliban ruled Afghanistan from 1996 until a U.S.-led coalition stepped in and removed the brutal regime from power in 2001. Many Afghans fear that a U.S. withdrawal would plunge the country into another bloody conflict. Women fear renewed bans on their education, employment, and freedom of movement.
Right now, the Taliban are against women and their achievements. If they accept women and their achievements in a peace deal, that is very good. But it is not going to be good if the peace comes without giving women their rights.
Taliban negotiators have rejected talks with the Afghan government, calling it a U.S. puppet. But U.S. officials say inter-Afghan talks are a prerequisite for any lasting peace in the country. Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani says he will be a tough negotiator.
The Taliban are part of this country, but they cannot determine the fate of the country. Election is a legitimate right of the Afghan people, and they must choose their legitimate government.
U.S. negotiators are hoping to reach a deal with the Taliban before Afghanistan's presidential elections set for September 28th. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
And this is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A study recently published in the journal Atmospheric Chemistry and Physics suggests the thawing permafrost in Alaska is releasing emissions of nitrous oxide at a rate that's about 12 times higher than had been assumed. Nitrous oxide is considered the third most significant human-generated greenhouse gas behind carbon dioxide and methane. Climate scientists say greenhouse gases traps heat in the atmosphere and warms the planet. Lead author of the study, Jordan Wilkerson from Harvard University, said small increases in nitrous oxide emissions would have the same effect on climate change as a large plume of carbon dioxide. The study points out that once in the stratosphere, nitrous oxide combined with sunlight and oxygen also changes into nitrogen oxides, which may harm the ozone. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. The World Health Organization warns of serious consequences if nations do not take immediate action to stop the escalation of measles infections, which have reached alarming new heights. Lisa Schlein has that story from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Nearly 365,000 cases of measles have been reported globally so far this year, the highest number since 2006. The World Health Organization says that is almost three times as many cases than at the same time last year. And with four more months left in 2019, it warns more bad news is in store. The WHO says measles is increasing in all regions of the world, with the exception of the Americas. WHO Director of the Department of Immunization, Vaccines and Biologicals, Kate O'Brien, says the world is backsliding and is not on track to eliminate the dangerous but largely preventable disease by 2020.
We are absolutely backsliding on the measles situation, and that is extremely worrying for certainly the health of children, absolutely the health as well of adolescents and adults, as I mentioned. And it also signals that there is a complacency in some way about our immunization systems.
A European regional report finds four countries, Albania, Czech Republic, Greece, and Britain, have lost their measles elimination status. However, Austria and Switzerland attained elimination status, having interrupted transmission of the disease for at least 36 months. O'Brien says children are not getting vaccinated against the disease for a variety of reasons. She tells VOA it sometimes is physically difficult for parents to go to a clinic to have their child vaccinated. She says vaccine hesitancy and complacency, as well as misinformation about the safety of vaccines, play a role.
We do see in high-income countries to some degree, there are small, well-defined communities that have religious or ethnic or social beliefs where a community as a whole is declining vaccines.
On the other hand, O'Brien notes in countries of conflict and other fragile settings, getting and delivering life-saving vaccines to the populations is often very difficult. She says she's very concerned about the politicization of vaccines. She says vaccines have no role in political conflict and should never be used in this way. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And before I go, we'll take a quick look back in time. It was on this date in 1958 that pop superstar Michael Jackson was born in Gary, Indiana. And in 1966, the Beatles concluded their fourth American tour with their last public concert held at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. And on that note, that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of producer Nadia Taha, engineer Sidrak Franklin, and managing editor Kate Pound Dawson, thank you so much for listening. You'll find in-depth coverage and news on our website. And don't forget, with our mobile app, you can download the stories and take them with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Make it a great day.